This is Shudders Inc. with Bruce Williams and Glyn Lavender.
Hi, and welcome to episode 568 of Shudders Inc. This is Bruce Williams from ShuddersIncPodcast.com.
Hello,
and
Bruce.
Joining me once again, good evening, Mr. Lavender, from creativephotoworkshops.com.au. How are you?
You know, you could just like pre-record that and just like AI change the number.
Could I AI change your face?
I don't know. Do you want to get rid of it altogether? Yeah. We can do it. Here, watch this. I'm going to AI change it for you. There you go. Look at that. You can't see me. And now I'm back.
That's
again.
Right.
Now,
so. Oh, have you been? That.
Me?
Yeah. You're the only one here I'm talking to.
That you tell us. No, I've been pretty good. I think it doesn't seem like very long since we last talked. That's all. So I can't think of.
It's been 2 weeks.
But it's cut. So we're used to, you know, 3, 4, 8. Yeah, it's 2 weeks, and the world of photography's changed in that time, Bruce. There's so much to talk about. You know, I mean, with Canon going under, that was a big shock.
What?
And with the Canon going under. And Sony ceasing making cameras. And it's been a big week in photography. Those 2 weeks, ground changing.
I missed all those headlines.
Ground changing world of photography. And apparently everyone's going back to film.
Right.
They're finding it that it's just too much for the world. All these images being produced. Yeah. And now everyone's only going to be allotted 72 shots a year.
I love it.
It's a new rule. And you've got to wear a mask whilst taking those photos, of course. It's obligatory. No, I'm not sure. Lots happened in 2 weeks, Ruth. I don't think anything quite as earth-shaking as all those things has happened.
Okay.
But I've been having a nice enough old time. I've been building my presentation for the Bright Festival of Photography, which I finished yesterday at 1 o'clock in the afternoon, 302 pages. And I went up to the lovely rural town of Horsham last night, which is about a 3.5 hour drive away from my place, to do a 1 hour talk. So I drove 3.5 hours. I talked for an hour. I drove 3.5 hours. But I thought it was good, a good chance to test it out in some guinea pigs.
Yeah,
and see how the talk went before it. Before it went to Brighton, yeah, put it in front of a bigger audience. But I've got a couple of tips for public speakers.
So 302 pages, that's got to be around about 10 or 11 seconds per frame.
Oh, possibly, yeah. Yeah. Some less, some more, you know. That's but the average, the mean average, as they say. But I've got some tips for anyone who has to do public speaking.
Yeah, don't.
No, I do. Great. Love public speaking. Fabulous, fabulous thing to do, you know. Just picture yourself naked and you're perfectly fine, you know. No, it's don't build a 302-page presentation, not have any run-throughs, and then do it live straight on entirely new content that you weren't even really sure about yourself when you started writing it or when you finished it.
So
when you had no idea
wrong?
Where it was coming from or where it was going. Well, no, it actually worked-ish, sort of. But, you know, it's really hard to get the flow on the first run-through. It's basically the first – I mean, I didn't even have time to just flick through the slides and see if they needed any of the orders changing. You know, this one would be better here or there, you know.
Okay.
If they made cognizant sense.
So when you're putting that together, have you got like a set of bullet points or a full script even of what you plan to say for the hour?
Mate, I don't have an idea what I'm going to say in the next slide.
Right, okay.
Basically, the way I do it is – This particular talk is called Dog Car Window.
Oh yes, we spoke about this.
Yeah, your guide to better travel portraits and travel photos, which is it's a logical leap, which was inspired by a potato chip advert.
Right.
And so I saw the advert on TV. I thought, you know, that's my next talk in a nutshell. That's the next thing I could talk about. And so that's what it started with. It started with a copy of their advert as the first page.
Nice.
Dog car window, pack of chips. Yeah. And then I said, well, what does that mean?
You've got to send me that photo because I don't think I've seen it.
What does that mean to me? What does that, you know, what can I say about that? Why did that? And here's the thing about anything to do with creatives and creativity type stuff, something triggers something. Yeah, yes. You get triggered by something, and it's then the artist's job to try and figure out what that trigger was and whether there's any depth to it and whether there's more behind it that you can sort of flesh out by working through it. And that's kind of what it is. I put that slide up and I thought, well, yeah, okay, let's start with the word dog. And so I built, you know, half a dozen pages based around the word dog. Then I did the same thing around the word car. Then around the word window. I just sent through the picture to you on Skype-a-rooney just then. So build it from there and then build the philosophy out further and further and further. And the philosophy is based around how to shoot complex travel scenes and craft the strongest possible image from that chaos. And there, so therefore then I delve into what do I actually, you know, I do so much stuff instinctually that I don't think about what I don't think about what I'm doing. So therefore I have to sit down and think about, well, what am I actually doing? And what is it that I'm actually seeing? And why am I seeing that? And what made me see that? And how did I get that thing that I saw into an image that made sense? So whenever we say the words dog, car, window to people, if you have to assign those three things together, what does it show in your head? What do you see in your head? And what do you see in your head, Bruce, when I say dog, car, window?
A dog sitting behind the wheel of the car driving with one arm on the windowsill and his tongue flopping out.
What kind of dog?
The dog I'm picturing, what's that breed? It's an English breed. I want to say golden retriever. I don't know if that's the breed that I'm thinking of, but
okay. Yeah. So it's that goldy sort of colour?
Yeah.
So it's like a medium big dog?
With the shaggy hair, yeah.
Okay, yeah. What's the expression like on the face?
Oh, dopey.
Yeah. Where's he going?
Oh, I don't know. He's driving his car.
Has he just got off a country drive or something? Yeah. What's the weather like?
Sunny day.
Yeah. So the simple, those three words, dog, car, and window, can build a complete and complex story in your head, correct?
Sure.
And every single person you ask will have a different type of dog, a different car, different window, different experience, based on who they are as people.
Yeah.
So yeah, you ask 10 people to write out dog, car, window, what it means to them, you get 10 of the same story writ completely differently.
Right.
Okay. Reverse that and take a complex scene and break it down into three words.
Oh, okay, yep.
So instead of me giving you three words and you building a scene in your head, you've arrived at spot A on your travels. Mm-hmm. In front of you is all this stuff that's going on. What's the story in the simplest possible words?
Gotcha.
Can you break it down to dog, car, window or something along that line? Yeah. Basically find the adjectives in the scene. Find the words that describe what's going on and then figure out how to get those words into a two-dimensional image in the camera.
Yeah.
That's basically what the whole premise of the talk is.
I think we should have probably described in a little more detail the actual ad for the chips.
Really?
Yeah, because I think the part of it that I didn't understand until I saw the image is the text on the blue bar.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I didn't even see that until, like, yesterday.
Right. So the text says, okay, so in the bottom right-hand corner of the image, we've got the Smith's Crisps logo.
Yeah.
And the text on the blue bar says, joy is a simple recipe.
Yeah.
Hence, dog, car, window, right?
Yeah.
There's joy in those three elements, and it's a simple recipe that, yeah, and then the analogy is that, you know, their chips are bring you joy and it's a simple recipe. But, yeah, I love it.
But the funny thing is I didn't see that till yesterday.
Right. What made this resonate with you if you hadn't seen Joy is a Simple Recipe?
Because my brain said that's a simple recipe.
Right.
Dog, car, window. My brain said that is succincted a – but here's the stupid thing. Is this picture – does not look like a dog with a car out of the window with his head out the window.
No,
there's no real description of a picture of a window in there. You know,
no,
it's this. So to me, the advert actually fails in its own job to create the image that those three words are describing.
Yeah,
which is ironic, you'd have to say. Yeah, you know,
totally.
I got ChatGPT to make me up a dog car window picture.
Oh, okay.
So I don't have a dog. So I'm just sending that through to you now. Nice.
This will be interesting.
Not sure if that's come through or not. But far, far better descriptor or image of what I expect out of the words dog, car, window.
Right.
One of the biggest issues I find with people on my tours is not culture shock, but over opportunity shock. There's too many great photo opportunities or too many photo opportunities. You get into a flap about, and you try and do them all, or and you're rushing from one to the next, trying to capture these things, and not doing any of them as good as you could have done.
Yeah, I've just seen your image. I love
the picture. It's perfect, isn't it?
That's great.
It's perfect. That's ChatGPT. All it was is a picture of a dog with its head out the window with a stupid look on its face.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's everything. It's the weather, I imagine.
It's the
expression.
Wind.
Everything that you imagined and maybe that's an interesting exercise as well, is to type in words like that to these AI generators and see what they come up with. If you typed in dog car window, what would GPT come up with?
I don't know.
Might have to give it a shot. But yeah, so over opportunity shock is when there's so many opportunities to find. I mean, you're walking down some of these streets, and there is just incredible stuff happening everywhere, but people fail to capture anything
of substance,
best, let's say. That they capture images, they capture photos, no, they capture pictures, I should say, but they don't capture the distilled essence or the strongest story they can.
Yeah,
because they want to quickly do that one so they can get that one. It's better to have one great image than four average ones.
Yes.
And how do you get two or maybe three of those images really good? Well, you dog car window them. Yeah, you look at the scene very quickly. Say, what is it that attracts me?
Yeah,
what is it that I reacted to? What are the adjectives? What are the words? Bang, bang, bang. And so I came up with a thing yesterday whilst I was building the presentation. So it's like part two to that, which is all about framing the photo. And then it was depth, balance, color.
Okay.
So dog, car, window, what are the three words? What are the three elements that make the photo the story that you want to capture? Then how do you represent that in depth, balance of weight of balance of images, and what kind of color palette you want to use?
Yeah.
Or is there distracting colors or complementary, all that kind of stuff that you take into account. So you can distill a busy scene into the key words and then have a system that helps you frame it in the strongest possible way that tells that story.
But how do you employ color when it's already fixed in the scene?
Yeah, but how much of it do you have it in the scene? So color and balance can go together. I can have a lot of that color or a little bit of that color.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say it's a big blue pot. Let's say just to say there's a big it's a guy selling stuff. He's got a cool face. There's lots of cool things. And he's got these great big blue pots, which are amazing, but they're very dominant in the scene.
Right.
Do I show all the pot? Do I show half the pot? Do I show a quarter of the pot?
Gotcha.
Do I not show the pot at all because it imbalances everything?
Right.
You know, it's an analyzing the elements that make and break photos in the shortest possible time. By having a system, and what that does, so the trick is you got to know your camera gear backwards and forwards.
Yes,
you got to be very fluent with that. You've got to be able to see like lenses. So when you understand what the story is, you understand what lens is needed for that. The same way a golf caddy understands what club exactly you need for the next shot.
Yeah,
you need to know exactly what lens, what millimeter focal range you need for that shot, and so have all of those in place even before you step into start doing the shooting.
Yeah,
but the dog car window to understand the story at its strongest, and the depth. And depth is not is three dimensional, converging lines, vanishing points, all that kind of stuff. But it's also depth of the story with depth of field. Yeah, right. Do I want to show a lot of depth? Do I want to minimize that depth? What does adding that depth, how does that change or improve or decrease the quality of the image? You know?
Yeah.
Do I want foreground elements to be in focus or out of focus? Do I want background elements in ground? So all this stuff. But this is what I do when I shoot, but I've never thought about it.
Yeah, right.
So this is kind of saying, well, what am I doing? And I try and play these scenes through my head whilst I try to build this presentation, and it's slowly built from there. So from basically no idea to 302 pages.
Yeah, right.
Which is, yeah, seems a lot. But a lot of those just images. It's just a point and then image to back it up. Yeah.
Yeah.
Bang, ba-bang, ba-bang, ba-bang. Just repeating. It's not just a one-time example. I'm not just looking for a dog in every photo. Yeah, you have to explain things to people sometimes. I'm not looking for a dog. I'm not going to every scene and saying, where's the dog?
Yeah.
That's not the point. Yeah. And then pairing it back. So you've got to know all your camera gear and all your lenses really, really well.
Mm-hmm.
When you're not worried about gear, you're visually experiencing what's happening in front of you. All you're worried about is what, and you're looking for images, but you're not really looking for images because you don't see with your eyes.
Yeah.
Okay. You think with your brain.
Yeah.
Okay. So your brain is constantly processing the input that your eyes are giving, but you're not seeing, you're thinking.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And so there's a pitfall in travel photography where what you may be thinking when you're walking along is you're looking for the images that you've seen before you went to that place, all the thousands of photos of this location. I want to capture photos like that. So you're looking for that image. Yeah, you're looking for that style of photo, that type of character, whatever, rather than what's necessarily in front of you. You're looking for something that may not be there or may not be there anymore. It may have been there 30 years ago, but people don't do that anymore, or the buildings aren't like that anymore or whatever. So you'll be walking along, and all I want to do when I walk along is have reactions to things.
Mm-hmm.
Laugh, smile, grimace, pull back, be a bit scared, be inquisitive. Anything I have a reaction to, I want to try and photograph.
Right.
Because obviously there's something enough that's different, because I've seen a lot of stuff.
Yep.
So when you have a reaction to something, it must be something at least marginally different than stuff you've already seen.
Sure.
So you have a reaction that gives you time to stop. When you then you assess the scene and you try and find the story, what is it? Yeah, and dog, car, window, what's going on? What was it that gave me the reaction? What are those elements that are that? How do they work in relation to an image? And if I was to shoot it, where would I place it? What kind of depth? What kind of angle? So it's that process of getting through that. And it's all done, as I said, it's instinctive because, I don't know, it'd probably be fairly boring to think about it all the time. But if you're struggling and you're trying to go, you might be just having a bad day. You know, it's like, well, if you haven't shot for 6 weeks, mm-hmm, and you've got to go out and shoot, you've got to try and get the gears working again.
Yep.
Well, this is a way to get the gears working again as well. You just understand your process and start saying, well, I'll start trying to feel things on them, I'll start thinking about them, I'll start wordifying them and so on, you know? So that's basically the premise of the talk, and it's sort of built from there. But that was all built from dog, car, window, and no clue where I was going. And only finishing on the day of the talk.
Yeah, right.
Which is, yeah, but that's the way I always do stuff, you know? Yep. And you leave it to the last minute, and the pressure of time makes your work better.
Yeah.
Yeah, and some people, my wife would go nuts. Well, she does go nuts, so that sort of stuff drives her insane. That's not how her brain works.
Yeah.
But my brain needs
the pressure.
The time pressure to really focus and get the best out of it.
Yeah, right.
But I got a review from someone from last night. What did they say? They said, thank you for an amazing experience. So that's cool. It wasn't just a talk. I completely loved your talk last night and learned so much. So
beautiful.
One person got
made the 7-hour drive worth it.
Yeah, made it worthwhile. Well, mind you, I did get the free calamari and chips. Yeah, they shared me dinner beforehand, which was nice. Yeah, but no, it's such a lovely. If anyone is out in that sort of Western Victoria area of Horsham and are interested in photography and aren't associated with the club, they're a fabulous little club, Horsham Camera Club, and I would highly recommend you go and hang out with them. They're just the loveliest of peoples. So
cool.
Done a bunch of stuff with them over the years, and they're lovely.
Nice.
Yeah, so that was my but on the way up as well, on the drive up, it's a lovely 3.5-hour drive, but there's this place called Stawell where they run the running race called the Stawell Gift.
Yep.
Well, just near there there's this set of rocks called Sister Rocks.
Okay.
And they're these massive, basically freestanding boulders up to like 100-foot tall.
Wow.
And they're all and some really interesting shapes. And the whole the the whole countryside is normal, then there's this one little block of area with like 50 up to 150 foot rocks and nothing else anywhere. So I don't know why geologically this happened. Wow. But they're all clustered together, and then people have been over the years spray painting them and graffitiing them with vibrant colors and metallic paints, and so in the late afternoon glowing sun they can be pretty darn spectacular because they're really interesting shapes and really interesting colors. So I always stopped there, and so I stopped there and did a bit of photography, Bruce.
Nice.
Got out me 17 to 28 Tamron on the Sony and yep. did some shots, and they're all shit. And then I moved on because I'm crap at landscapes. But I had some fun. Yeah,
excellent.
And that's something about trying to get used to using Sonys for going away.
Yeah,
it's just get the camera in your hand, and even if it's not stuff that floats your boat photographically, at least you're using your gear and you're keeping the creative juices going and stuff.
Yeah.
Have you done any photography stuff this last week or two?
I set the shot up, but then gave the camera to somebody else to fire it because I was expected to be in the shot. It was a photograph of all of the staff of ABC Newcastle.
Standing, which is how many, sorry?
I think there was probably about 20 people in the shot.
Okay, so I'm saying you didn't light it then.
It was shot in the middle of the day in the harshest sun, so I put everybody in the shade.
That's all you can do.
Yeah, exactly. But they wanted it outside with a bit of branding behind it, so we've got a large pedestal type module thingy outside that's got ABC branding on it up the top. So I got everybody in position in front of it, borrowed one of my work colleagues' A7 III's because she went and bought an A7 III on my recommendation.
Nice.
I didn't have my camera at work on this particular day. I had no idea I was going to be asked to take a photo or I'd have taken my gear with me.
Yeah, of course.
So I went and grabbed her camera off her desk, said, "Bridge, I'm just borrowing your camera." She went, "Yeah, no worries."
Why wasn't she in the photo?
Oh, she was.
Okay, yeah.
She was. Basically got everyone in place, got the focal length as wide as I could get on this lens, looked through the viewfinder, got the framing right, and last week I had a guy shadowing me for the whole week because they want to train him up
so that
when I'm taking leave, they can have him back fill me.
Don't take holidays, Bruce. That's the old saying, remember?
That's it. So I said to him, I said, "Mate, this is where I want you to shoot it from, and I want you to make sure you get the ABC branding in the top and yada, yada, yada." So, so he then did the honours and pushed the button a few times whilst I was in the shot along with everybody else.
Did it work out okay?
It's okay.
That's what it is. It's a group shot outside in crap light.
Yeah. Exactly. And unfortunately, Bridge had her camera set to shoot in JPEG.
Oh, of course.
I would have preferred to have had the RAW because I could have then,
you could have done a bit more of the dynamics.
Post-work on the shaded area and lifted it up a bit. But yeah, it's okay. It did the job.
You can on the JPEG, just not as much.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. But I think that's probably about the limit of what I've shot in the last couple of weeks.
Wow. So you lined a camera up for someone else to take a photo.
That's it. But I want to come back to what you were saying about being so familiar with your gear that you don't need to think about it, that you can let your brain think about, what you're trying to capture and
the important stuff.
Yeah, exactly. I absolutely understood what you were saying, but from a context of the way I record an acoustic session with artists. I don't have to give 2 seconds thought to which microphones I'm going to grab because I know what a certain microphone will do.
Get the SMB 900 and away you go,
If there was such a thing, absolutely. I totally get that, because the interesting thing is the guy who was shadowing me last week, Brad, he is a well-known and well-respected audio engineer.
Yeah.
And he watched me do a couple of live-to-air acoustic sessions, and one of them in particular turned out to be I won't say it was painful, but it was unexpected in the way that it unfolded, because I'd been told three names of a guitarist and two vocalists who were coming for this session.
Yeah, and so you kind of have an idea what kind of gear you're going to need. And
yeah, except the people who walked through the door had different names, and one of them had a keyboard. And there was no guitar. And it was like, okay.
Was it a guitar?
No, it was an actual keyboard. So it was like, okay, we're not doing a guitar, we're doing a keyboard. So I've got to grab a DI box, and I've got to grab an extra mic lead, and I've got to do this, and I've got to do that. And just set it all up.
Yeah.
And I just got that set up. And normally when we do an acoustic session, they do two songs. And these guys had said, we've only got one song. When Paul had said, you're doing two songs, right? And they've gone, oh, no, we've only got one. And he's gone, okay. And around about this time, the doorbell rings.
It's these people with the guitar. And
there's the guy with the guitar.
Oh, my God.
But he's not playing with the guitar, with the keyboard player and the two vocalists. He's there to just play a classical guitar piece instrumental.
He have two instrumentals?
What? No, just the one.
Well, he's got one instrumental. They've got one song. It's perfect. Put them together, Bruce.
So our drive jock says to me, mate, if we do these guys with the keyboard and the two vocal, and they do their one song. If I then play a song, you know, so of indeterminate length, we'll assume that it's 3.5 to 4 minutes, would you be able to set things up for the guitarist to then do his thing? And I went, yeah, that's fine. So anyway, and Brad, who's, you know, shadowing me for the
shadow
week, he's just like, how can you, like, he said this to me later after it was all over. He said, I cannot believe how chill you are with with stuff that's just like completely out of left field, unannounced, and you just take it all in your stride. And it's like, well, you got to, you know.
Now, I've got the SMB 900, mate. That's all I need.
There you go.
Once you've got that, there's nothing going to flap you.
That's it. I thought it was interesting. And so what happened was, we did the first act. Paul then starts playing this song. We said to the act, okay, vocalist out, keyboard player out, leave your keyboard where it is, grab a couple of mics, set the guitarist in place. And I said, okay, we've got 2 minutes left on this song. Just give me a quick, you know, bit of playing so I can set a level, yada, yada. Literally let him play for about 20 to 30 seconds and went, yep, okay, that's fine, I've got it. Gave Paul the thumbs up, yeah, we're good to go. And and Brad just said, man, I just cannot believe you can pull something together so fast.
Yeah.
And as you say, you know, it all comes down to knowing your gear, knowing what portions of your gear do what and why you would choose one thing over another. And
see, I see like a lens, you hear like a microphone.
Absolutely.
You know what its dynamic strength is and sound range is, and you know,
totally,
all the other soundy words, things that go with it.
That's right.
And stuff.
The polar pattern.
That's what I'm. That's what I implied. But I wanted to appear stupid so you could appear smart. That's my standard motto in life. I want to appear stupid so everyone else can shine. But that comes out to that 10,000 hours crap again, though,
absolutely,
isn't it? As well, you know.
Yeah.
But you know, it doesn't have to be that hard. I say to people, you know, new camera. 10 minutes a night in front of the TV within your hands, this button does this, this button does that, this button. You're not going to be perfect at it, but you're going to go past that stumbling block period.
Yes.
That what was that again period. Yeah. Which button? That stuff where you need to do something under a little bit of time pressure, it's going to be easier. Okay, yeah. I guarantee you, 10 minutes a night, 3 weeks, and you've mastered that camera to the best point you can that you can't do without over a long period of time making an extension of your arm. That's kind of what it has to become, an extension. So I see light the same way you probably hear sound.
Yep.
I mean, I can see every nuance of light in a scene, mm-hmm, and where to use and how and what it's going to. So I know what almost every photo is going to look like before I shoot it.
Yeah.
And I imagine you know what the sound's going to, how it's going to come across, based on your experience.
Yeah.
And it's not a smart, I don't think of it as a smart assy thing. It's just, that's what you do. It's like a painter who wants to paint something. He's not going to pick up the wrong paintbrush.
Yeah.
He's going to pick up the right one for the next part of the drama without thinking about it, because he just does it a million times.
Yeah, and I'm sure your grand masters of, you know, the Renaissance era or whatever, you know, would mix their colours without even thinking about it.
Absolutely.
Yeah, because they've done it so often.
Yeah, to get that nuance of colour, it's just all feel. It's not, it's not, no precision, just a little bit more. And they just keep adding and adding and adding and adding until they get exactly what they want, And that's why I think something like Dog Car Window can help overcome a lot of stuff where there's so much stuff going on where that's not your normal place of being. That's not your normal environment. It's not the stuff happening that you're not used to, that you are reacting to left, right, which is what you kind of want out of a trip somewhere exotic is a whole bunch of new experiences. But I need to be able to find a way to get that image to work, not just to be a picture of it, but to be a photo. And that photo has to be all that depth, colour, balance, and there's more to it than those words, but we want to keep it simple. Dog Car Window, find the story, how are you going to balance the story, bang, and shoot, you know. And here's the thing too, and I talked about in the talk, is we don't dog car window, then I need this depth, ABC depth, whatever, and then walk up and go bang, and I've got it, because that's kind of like the starting point. You then start to sketch the image. You're working. What about if I change this balance a bit? What if I move a little bit here? What about this perspective? What about it? Then you start feeling. But you've kind of understood what you want to get. You've now got to find it exactly. You know, and you sketch around that image by taking photo after photo and kind of reassessing and continually asking questions too whilst you're doing it. You know, why did that not feel right? What was wrong with that shot that you didn't like? I didn't like the bounce. Okay, well, let me change this and do that constantly. And once you've got that live view in your viewfinder, it's like looking to, don't think about it as looking through a camera at a scene. Think about looking at a photo on your computer screen. What do I like about this? Don't think of it as that two-dimensional photo, not the three-dimensional scene in front of you, and then it'll help you balance out all those images and stuff.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think it's a really interesting method of getting rid of some of the noise, and that's kind of what you do with your sound, is you get rid of the noise that isn't the noise that you want.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what I do in a photo. I get rid of the noise that isn't the noise that I want.
Yeah.
Great analogy, Bruce. I like that. I think you've hit that on the head.
Thank you, mate.
Because it's exactly the same thing. It is noise. Anything that's not the story in the photo is noise.
Yeah.
Extra words is extra noise.
Yeah.
I should know. I use a lot of extra words. Yeah. Blah 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 blah. But and everyone had a bit of a laugh last night that someone who talks so much wants to succinct something down to three words, which I have to agree with them. but that's it. Extra noise is extra noise, and no one wants it in anything.
So maybe the next time you do the talk,
yes,
and you have them read out your hilarious introduction, you should then walk up to the lectern,
yes,
and go, dog, car, window.
Thank
and then
you.
Walk off the stage. See
Thank
what
you very
happens.
Much. Well, in my last talk, my photos are shit. I don't know why I bother. It's all about the inner battle with your negative voice.
Yeah.
And it's like, and basically the first opening slides were, I think every creative has an inner monologue that is a battle between, no, you can't do it, and yes, I can do it.
Yeah.
Can you silence that voice? The next slide is no. And then the next slide is, thanks for coming to my TED talk. So it's the fourth. So it's very similar. So, I should just do dog car window. Thanks for coming to my TED talk.
Since 2005, Shutters Inc. has been a labour of love. But beyond the time required to produce it, there is also a financial commitment. If you find value in the podcast and would like to help keep the servers running, hit up the Patreon link, which is in the show notes. Even a couple of dollars a month will help. Much appreciated. Now, back to the podcast.
So what do you got on your list?
I found a couple of things that were just coincidentally interesting.
Okay.
That there's been two discoveries in the world of imagery this week, or that's been announced this week. One is a woman found a series of 50 unknown Ansel Adams images.
Wow.
That he did as a part of a commercial shoot for a railway line back in the 40s or something, where the brief was how Indians on reservations are dealing with the encroachment of railway lines.
Wow.
And I haven't seen many of the images, but this woman's there. And none of them are signed, unfortunately, because it was a commercial job, not an art project.
Yes, right.
But there's lots of images that he took at the same time in a similar area that are signed and well known. And wow. The Ansel Adams people at museum have basically said, yes, we're 95% sure they're his.
Wow.
Without going into a deeper analysis of each image, pretty confident to say yes. They're dependent upon that final analysis. But the thing is, they're only worth $2,000 or $3,000 a piece, these one-off originals, because they're not signed.
Yeah.
Where they'd be worth $10,000 a piece or whatever if they were. Yeah. So $500,000 versus, still $100,000 maybe. It's not too bad off. But I thought it was very interesting that such a large volume of images of such a well-known photographer can exist in the wild for nigh on 100 years.
Yeah.
And then an even more amazing discovery of unearthed film footage of the JFK assassination.
What?
Somebody who shot 8mm footage that takes off where the Zapruder film finishes. This
wow.
guy has got this footage, and this guy shot it. He was shooting from a bridge, not shooting, but filming from a bridge. And he's got the security guard Secret Service guy jumping over the top of the Kennedys, trying to protect them,
yeah.
and the car rushing down the bridge. And there's all this information. But he did this film back in 63, and
wow.
it was sitting in boxes of other films for years and years. The guy got dementia, forgot all about, died, got passed down to another family member. That guy went through his life, died, passed down to somebody else who's then said, oh, I want to see what's in these boxes of stuff.
Wow.
He goes, I'll see what's on this film. I think it's just the date on the film, the box of the film, and there's this Kennedy. So it's going up for auction at the moment. But I mean, isn't it just astounding the stuff that's still out there that can be found?
That's phenomenal.
Who would have thought one of the biggest things that happened in our lifetime?
But looking at the angle of the thumbnail of the YouTube video.
Yeah.
That looks like he was standing on the roadside at the bottom of the grassy knoll.
It's a grassy knoll. But I'm sure I read somewhere that it was on a bridge, but it's too low an angle.
It does look
too low. But that's if this footage is actually.
I mean, I think there's a bridge overpass near where this guy was standing, but I think he might have been under the bridge.
So it's just over a minute long.
Wow. Of footage. Well, I'm looking forward to watching that.
Here's what I think. I think I read it. He showed up on Lemon Avenue overpass, but he actually showed up on Lemon Avenue in Dallas. I think I was just skipping. I only read every third word, so because there's no point reading all those words. There's too many of them. Dog car window me, guys. Come on. But the footage is in two parts. It begins with Carpenter Sr. just missing the limousine carrying the President and First Lady, but capturing the other vehicles as it traveled down Lemon Avenue toward downtown. Then it picks up after Kennedy's been shot as the motorcade roars down Interstate 35 and speeds towards Parkland Hospital.
Wow, that's amazing.
It's just quite remarkable that six decades later this thing can show up, So I thought that was kind of two interesting things to bring up. But one thing, I just came across this little article on lithium-ion batteries, where these scientists, the boffins, the head boffins, have discovered a way to get them to last 50% longer.
Wow.
And it's all to do with the first charge.
Oh, okay.
So the problem is we can't charge them at home. On the way the first charge needs to be charged. So the gist, this is the blurb. The gist is the positive electrode of a brand new lithium ion battery is 100% full of lithium. Okay.
Okay.
During the initial charge, which requires that the lithium flow into the negative electrode, some of the lithium is deactivated and lost to use forever.
Oh.
This is true every time a lithium ion battery goes through a charge discharge cycle. And why batteries deliver decreased performance over time. So I never knew why, but there's that. So they found a way that by supercharging the initial charge with this really high intensity electricity, it deactivates less of the lithium in that initial transfer from positive to negative, and gives you up to 50% longer battery life. Even though you have normal charging from there on, its initial one has activated so much more of the lithium that the battery's going to last longer.
Wow.
You could think of, for things like electric cars. Yeah. Everyone worries about, when the batteries die, what's the cost going to be to replace them? If this is the way to make them last 50% longer, it's better for the environment, obviously. It's also better for your cost of running your vehicle. But even for cameras, imagine cameras that you're not worried after 2 years that your battery is going to suddenly die.
Yeah.
You've got 3 or 4 years out of your investment,
Yeah.
So I just thought that it was a fascinating little bit of science, I just thought as well.
Absolutely.
So, yeah. So that's pretty much it for me.
Okay.
So
just not going to cover the iPhone story?
Well, I thought if we were going to talk about the one that you sent through about the camera, we could mention that afterwards.
Oh, okay. Fair enough. Philip Johnson sent us a couple of stories.
Phil.
First one, he said, well, this takes astrophotography to another level. The LSST camera weighs in at 6,600 pounds. 2.2 pound to the kilo, so that's, about 3 ton, about 3,000 kilos, thereabouts. And 3,200...
That's almost 1,000 kilo. That's almost a kilo a megapixel.
That's right. And 3,200 megapixels.
I'm wondering if it's required. We now know what a megapixel weighs. Because if it's about 3,200 kilos and it's 3,200 megapixels... You can calculate straight away. If I need a 4,000 megapixel camera, well, it's 4,000 kilos, mate.
Yeah.
Yeah, they'll know how heavy it is. If they'll send it to space or something, they'll know what sort of propulsion they're going to need.
That is a cracker of a lens, isn't it?
It is amazing.
I'm just looking at the picture of it. It's phenomenal.
I remember years and years and years ago
shooting... You wouldn't want to get a scratch on that front element.
But I was shooting they're significantly smaller, but a Pentax 800mm lens for a 6x7 camera.
Whoa!
So this thing was like a Canon, but it took two tripods to hold it.
Wow!
It was a beast. So I can only imagine how many tripods you're going to need for that sucker. Yeah. But because that was the biggest ever digital camera made, then I saw some guys had made the biggest ever iPhone. that they could download those photos onto, I guess, So YouTube has built the world's largest iPhone with working camera.
How?
It's 6.74 foot tall and weighs 440 pounds. So it's not very many megapixels, obviously.
So how did they make it?
I don't know. I didn't read the article. I just saw
that. That's crazy.
You guys, you were saying they had a really big camera. I thought we need a really big phone to go with it. Hilarious.
Wow. Yeah. I'm going to have to watch that too.
I mean, there's the world wanting to get smaller and smaller cameras, and all of a sudden, bang, the world's gone crazy the other way. And what else have you got? Anything else?
And the last one from Phil was photographer loses $20,000 legal battle over a traffic ticket for a wounded grizzly bear.
What?
So
is this RF Kennedy?
A wildlife photographer has lost an extraordinary $20,000 legal battle over a traffic ticket that came about after he slowed his car to check on a wounded grizzly bear. He was found guilty of a minor moving violation in Grand Teton National Park. Mangelson, who is based in Jackson Hole, Wyoming, estimates that he'll have spent over $20,000 fighting a $150 traffic ticket.
Folks are from where I come from. Okay. I mean, there's principles, and then,
He's a 78-year-old. He'll be dead before he has to pay it.
Oh, yeah, good point. Yeah, nothing to worry about. Yeah.
That's kind of weird, though. Like,
here's something that's kind of cooler. The 78-year-old photographer is well known for his images of the famous grizzly bears at Grand Teton, including Grizzly 399. So he's got famous images of, they've obviously numbered the bears, and her cubs, and Grizzly 610, which is who he pulled over to check on, is one of the 399's cubs.
Yeah, right.
So that's kind of cute, And you probably recognize him. It's probably leaning out going, Dad! Dad, or whatever his name is. Dad, I'm dead. What was his name? Was his name Ted?
I don't know.
Oh, no, Tom. There we go. Tom! I'm dumb. No, no, no. But yeah, I think at some point you have to kind of say, well, this is just kind of starting to get a bit futile and go on. Well, anyway, I think that's it.
We thought
we had nothing to say tonight, and as usual, I've blathered on and ruined it for everybody, and we got a little bit of content in at the end.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. There you go. Pretty simple.
All right, mate. Well, you look after yourself.
I'm going to go add some more pages to my presentation. Yeah, it seems a bit short.
10 seconds is too long.
No, I've got to refine, based on the flow from last night, refined a few little bits. But right. I think we've got one more podcast before Bright Festival of Photography, so we'll have to see what exciting things are coming up for there.
Nice. So
looking forward to that.
Awesome.
You have to come down one year.
I would love to.
Well, come down. How about we try and do it for 2026,
mm-hmm.
and you come down, and we run a podcast from there.
Okay.
Because the boys from the Down South Photo Video Podcast, mm-hmm. they're doing live the podcasts from there too. So
yeah, right.
We could do it. Come down, have a weekend, and it's sunny. Yeah, 10 hours from your place, isn't it? 8 hours? That's probably about 8 hours, eight-hour drive. It's only an hour over the border.
Right.
Into Victoria,
yep.
which is not too bad.
Yep.
Could be all the way in Melbourne, which is four hours from the border. But that'd be kind of cool.
Yeah.
Who knows? Let's get a GoFundMe from our listener started and let's see if they can raise funds for your petrol.
Yeah. Sounds good.
All right, mate.
All right, mate. Well, you have a good couple of weeks.
Will do. Talk to you soon.
See you, mate. Bye.
Bye, all.
You've been listening to Shutters Inc. For questions, comments, and feedback, email theboys@shuttersincpodcast.com.